Good evening, everybody. This is Trica St. Germain and the Ascension Secrets of St. Germain. I want to thank you all for listening, and I am on Fast Chat tonight if you want to send me messages. And this evening, I actually got to listen to about three-quarters of Ron's show, which was great. And as synchronicity always has it, the notes that I wrote earlier today about what I wanted to talk about is so much of what Ron talked about, and no surprise there. And so maybe I can give you a few other techniques that Ron didn't have time to do about some of the things that he spoke to. And before we start, though, I want to wish my two of my dogs, Jeremy and Jolie, their brother and sister. Today's their birthday. They're 8 years old, so I want to wish them a happy birthday. And being that they are dogs, you know, dogs, most animals are so connected to spirit, to their spirit and to their source, because they do not have the emotional drama and trauma and the egos and the stories that we make up and we believe about ourselves that aren't true, and they don't get an entity attachment and things like that. So it's really wonderful to watch dogs, and dogs in particular, their gift to us is unconditional love. And other animals have different gifts, but dogs in particular are here to show us and to remind us about unconditional love. And I've learned a lot of things from my dogs, and I just want to honor them. So, having said that, as Ron was talking about entities and astral entities and from, you know, emotional bodies of disincarnate spirits and stuff, that ties in really strongly to a little rant that I wanted to do about channelers. In general, there are some very good channelers, let me say that off the bat. However, the predominance of them, in my opinion, in my experience, are not that good. Because a channel that is opening up their body and their soul and their expression to let another energy come into their physical body and speak through them is asking for a lot of trouble. And you have to be of an extremely high and disciplined nature and a really high frequency and a large understanding about the whole channeling process in order to be a good and clear channel. And I, you know, every channel tells you, I'm a clear channel. That's not necessarily true. Someone can only channel what they're capable of reaching frequency and vibrationally. And there are so many energies that are not ascended masters or angels that masquerade themselves to be ascended masters and angels, and they are just thrilled at all these people that want to sit in a chair, hold a couple of crystals in their hands, and boom, I'm channeling. And, you know, you can go to any of these public channeling sessions, and you'll see 10, 20, 30, sometimes 100 people all sitting on the floor just looking up in awe at these channelers and listening to everything they say is gospel and taking it so seriously and so to heart. And where, and but yet, you know, a person like myself or Ron that don't channel dead entities, a lot of people discount us as not being a valuable spiritual source because we're not channeling. This is all of this little discussion is being precipitated by an email I got from someone the other day asking me in a very kind of sarcastic way, like, well, Do you channel, or do you just hear, you know, do you just tell me what they're saying, or do you channel? And I wrote back to this woman that, no, I don't channel, and for the same reasons. There's clones out there, there's entities, there's whatever that come through people and say their messages or whatever. What I do is I go into the higher realms. I meet with Saint Germain. I see him. We meet kind of halfway between my dimension and his dimension. I see him. He's standing right next to me. I don't have to worry about who the hell's coming through my body, because no one's coming through my body. I see the real thing, and I tell people what he's telling me to tell them. And this one, and that wasn't good enough for this woman. She wanted me to be talking to dead people or have dead people coming through me, you know. So bless her and release her. Let her learn discernment somewhere else, maybe in another lifetime, who knows. But, again, this is all going back to discernment and who you're listening to, what you're listening to, and why you're listening to it. And there are people, you know, like Ron and myself and some others that can help people and assist them, but none of us that are really receiving or able to really capture this high energy and information, none of us want to be gurus. None of us want anybody dependent on us. And the first thing that, you know, that I tell people, and I know Ron and others do, is you need to do this yourself. You know, we will assist you in clearing yourself, showing you how to get your own guidance and how to recognize what is the true guidance and what is the astro debris, as I call it. And Ron was talking about that, the difference between what's in your head and what's in your heart, which is the same thing I always tell people. But, you know, The channelers that are hanging out with the astro stuff and the ETs, the negative ETs, and the, you know, Fred from the astro plane that thinks it's really great to pretend he's Saint Germain, those kind of people want you to be dependent upon them. They want you to keep coming back with their questions. They want you to be you know, they're bread and butter. That's how they're making their money, is off of you, and also how they're getting energy and power is off of you and your adoration and the fact that you are giving them a level of authority. And so be very careful and watch that sort of stuff. And the New Age is just totally rampant with this glamorization and idolization of a lot of people. And there's a recent event, and, you know, this radio station, BBS radio station, has got some information on the website, on their website, that I don't particularly agree with, and I love the people that are running the station. I don't want to, you know, ruffle feathers, but, you know, me, I say whatever I need to say. And so, recently, a man named Ron Talmadge died. It was about, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I guess, at this point. And he's being canonized into a martyr and a saint without people really knowing the full story. It's very common for the New Age. Anyone that's done something that is visible or has made a name for themselves, that people just assume that these are, you know, that these people are practically walking on water without really knowing very much about him. Ron Talmadge developed some sort of water purification system, the miracle water. Ron Talmadge is no person to be idolized. And I'm using him as an example because it's recent. I'm not picking on him. it's a very dramatic example. And I think that these things should be used to wake people up and to make everyone realize, again, discernment, that don't give your power away to these false idols, to these people with clay feet. Ron Talmadge was killed by a SWAT team because he murdered two people. And this is not rumor. I happen to be a close friend with the roommate of the person that got killed, who was also a close friend of Ron, and I know the whole actual story. And whether I knew the story or not is immaterial to the point of glamorizing people without a good reason. Just, you know, just on a whim that, oh, well, there was some sort of New Age person, you know. The other one that has become a very dramatic story is Dr. Joshua Stone, who died a couple of years ago. And it's, do you remember when you were kids, you played that game called Telephone, where everyone sat in a circle and you'd start out with one statement, and each person would whisper it into the next person's ear, who would then turn and whisper it. And by the time it got back to the circle, it had nothing to do with what the original one was, what the original statement was. And that's kind of what's happened with Joshua Stone and with other people, that each time someone tells the story or tells what they think happened, it seems to get even more glamorous and more exciting and more exalted and more ridiculous. Ascension is something very unique and very different. And it's when someone ascends, they do not leave a dead corpse. They take their body with them into the light. And a person that, by the time they're going to be ready to ascend, is pretty much free of all ego, of all bragging, and of all telling everyone how great they are. Any teacher that's going to tell you how great they are and how exalted they are and how in the higher realms, you know, I'm higher than Jesus and all of this kind of crap, is not a spiritual teacher. The more you know, the more you practice, the higher your frequency and vibration becomes, the more you see the ridiculousness of those statements, because we are all one. Nobody is more exalted than the next person. How can you be? I mean, we're all cells within the body of God. So just think of your own particular body. Do you look at your leg and you go, oh, wow, that cell in there, God, that one's really spectacular. And that one is so evolved, but gosh, that one sitting next to him, that's a low-level consciousness. You know, the cells in your body, as you look at them, they're all important. You want all of them to be given the respect and the love that they deserve. And you don't place one cell above the next. They all work together as the whole. And that's something that you go into, not just the thought of it, but you live your life and you feel that. You feel that oneness and you feel the connection to each and every person on the planet and each and every tree and blade of grass, and animal, and insect, and except the bad ones. I'm being funny. But, you know, you feel that oneness when you reach that consciousness where you're able to ascend, and you're not bragging about who you are and what you are and how much you know and how much better and higher you are than everybody else. The stories about Joshua Stone are that he ascended. Not only did he ascend, and, you know, it started off just that, you know, he ascended. Then it became, he ascended, and there were people there watching him, and they saw him, you know, flash into a bright light and raise up, and he spoke to them and all that. You know, that is total nonsense. Joshua Stone was a severe diabetic. He died alone at night with nobody around him from an overdose of insulin. And it is questionable and unresolved as to whether he did that intentionally, as in suicide, or if it was an accident. I personally kind of wonder how someone who has given themselves insulin shots for 30, 40 years of their life all of a sudden gives themselves three or four times that amount as an accident. But, you know, it could happen. So, again, and now, you know, he's becoming like Elvis. You know, he's bigger in death than he was in life because these stories keep getting perpetuated and nobody seems to even question it in these, you know, in the circles where these, where people know about Joshua Stone. It's like you mention his name now and a large majority of people just, you know, genuflect and bow and just go, and speak in hushed, holy tones. Oh, Joshua Stone, you know, he's ascended. So you make the decision if he ascended or not. And even if he did ascend, it's no reason to give all of your power to someone and a thought form. You know, Ascended Master Saint Germain and El Moria and Archangel Michael and all of that, they are the first ones to, again, be humble and to give, to show you how to take your power back and how to empower yourself. I have never, in, I won't mention how many years I've been on this planet because I just won't. I don't put numbers on myself. But in quite a few decades, I have never, ever once encountered the real Saint Germain telling someone to pray to him or to bow down and give him, put him on a pedestal and worship him. The first thing he tells people is, if you must, just think of me as your older brother. You know, if you must feel a distinction or a difference between you and I, then just make it that I'm your older brother and I'm here to help you. And that's truly how the higher beings of light are. They know the oneness. They know that you are as the same as them, that you have the same potential, the same spark of God and divinity that is in them is in you. And they know that, and they see that, and that is how they see you. They see, they don't see the imperfections. They see you as you truly are, as a magnificent divine being that we all are. So, having said that, I'm through with my rant now. Some things that you can do to bring out more of you, to allow more of you to live within your body, to diminish the emotional tug of war and the clanging of the chain that the emotions do that pull you off center, pull you off your base, pull you off of who you really are, that Bron was talking about that earlier too, is if you think about it, what gets you into an emotional snit? either an elevated ego opinion of yourself or the opposite, which is also of the ego, of feeling like, you know, you're some worthless crumb, you know, floating in the dirt or something. What what really does that is the thoughts and the stories that we believe about ourselves that are not true. And these stories are based upon what we've experienced on this planet so far and what people have told us directly or indirectly that we have chosen to believe. And it's a way of looking at things, you know. There's many, many ways to look at the same exact experience. And how you look at that experience is what creates the story. So you can simply, and I say simply with knowing how hard it is, but the technique is simple. The practice and the getting it really down takes practice, and it takes a strong desire to do so, and it takes consistency. But you can go back and rewrite the story of your life. You can do this in total truth and in total honesty. The fact that I'll use myself as an example. I didn't have what I would consider the best relationship with my father. I didn't have the type of relationship that I really wanted. I know the facts of my life and how that interplayed. So when I say rewrite the script, in truth and in integrity, I can't say to myself or to rewrite that, oh, I was Daddy's little darling and he loved me so much and he took me everywhere and he would sit me on his knee and tell me story after story when I was a young girl. None of that was reality. So I can't say that. But what I can change and what I can rewrite is my feeling and understanding and perception of what happened to me when I was a child. And basically what happened to me when I was a child, you rise above the third dimensional quagmire and the third dimensional drama and trauma and the oh poor me's and the hurt feelings and all of that, and you look at things from an overview, from a higher perspective. And when you do that, you can rewrite the script in a very honest way, because you're just looking at things differently. You're accepting a higher explanation or a higher story than the third dimensional viewpoint of it. And what happened with my father and I is, how I changed, the feeling of being neglected and not being loved and not being accepted and all, is I looked at why. Why did I come into a situation like this? Why did I pick that man as my father? Why did I want that script to be run in my life? How did it serve me? What did I gain from it if I look for the highest point? What was that highest point? And I use a lot of different modalities. I look at astrological charts, I look at numerology, I go into lucid dreaming and have conversations with my higher self and with the higher self of other people. And I find different ways to look at it from a different perspective, and this has taken me years. It's a lot easier now for people starting to do this, because this kind of thing has been put into the matrix and into the grid. It's in the collective consciousness now, where it's easier to utilize these tools. The tools have been formed in place, but years ago there wasn't that much awareness, so I just looked at things from every different angle I could. And what I found through, I even did past life regression and all, is that the reason why that happened to me, or the reason why I chose to create that for myself, and, you know, when you're going through it, as you know, when people say, well, we choose our own reality, I mean, you just want to, you know, well, I can't use that word on the radio, but you just want to tell them, you know, shove it or whatever, because you know that you didn't choose it at that moment. You're suffering from the lifestyle that you're going through. You're not, you know, no one's happy with a lack of money or a bad relationship or an illness or whatever, and to have some, you know, bouncy, perky little New Age snip come and say, we choose our own reality. You created this. You know, you just want to strangle them, right? So I'm not saying it in that same vein, but ultimately in the higher view of things, before we got here and incarnated, we did choose things. We chose some hard things for ourselves to experience in order for us to grow and for our soul growth and our evolution. And I'll tell you one thing, when you're on the other side and you're in that higher perspective, nothing seems, there's no problems. You don't think that anything is really a problem. And a lot of us take too much on our plate. It's like, 'cause we're so anxious to really evolve. You know, we'll go, oh, yeah, okay, I'll take that, and yeah, I'll take that, and okay, give me, you know, some of that, and sure, I'll do that, and I'll do. Then you get here on the other side of the veils where you don't remember any of that, and you don't remember who you are and what you are and how divine and how powerful you are, and you get into this third-dimensional conditioning, and, you know, it's like being dropped into boiling oil. At that point, you've chosen too much for yourself sometimes, you know? So be real careful in between lives how much you take on. But anyway, so what I saw with my father, or what the situation is that in this lifetime, I wanted to experience being a woman in a man's world. It's changing, but when I was born, it was 100% a man's world. And, you know, women could barely vote. And to experience total independence and to learn to stand totally on my own two feet and become what we would call a self-made person. That was one of my lessons that I wanted to experience. So, of course, I had to have a father who I definitely wasn't daddy's little girl, being given things and handed things. And, you know, because how could I have learned my lessons without him being distant and emotionally cold and non-supportive of me? And as I looked at the higher relationship between the spirit that took the body, you know, that was my father in this lifetime, again, the higher perspective of who he really was, on the higher realms and in other incarnations and in other times, we were and are very connected and very, very much in a loving, supporting, beautiful relationship. And for someone to come, to be willing to come into your life and be the bad guy, or to be perceived as the bad guy, takes someone who loves you beyond imagination, that is willing to do that for you, and to have that for the time period that we're on Earth, which in reality is faster than a snap of fingers. I mean, you can be here 300 years in the same lifetime, it's still a blink of an eye in eternity. But while you're here, you know how it is, you know, each day is a long period of time from our third dimensional perception. So he was willing for all that time, that period of time, to be the bad guy and to be perceived as the bad guy. Not just by me, but by the whole family. You know, the whole family was, you know, you've got a beautiful daughter. Why don't you treat her like a human being, you know? And my father was not abusive in a physical way. He never struck me. He never, you know, he was just emotionally absent. And so there was no love or support, you know, from him. It was like just having this body that no one was home. And, you know, so now when I look back at my father and the relationship that I had with him, it's still the events were still the same. The events, I'm not rewriting or pretending like the events were different. I'm just looking at them with a different perspective. And so now, instead of feeling like I did for about 30 or 40 years of my life that I had a father that I could never please or that, you know, didn't love me. Now I look at my father and our relationship and I go, what an incredible father I had. You know, my father loved me so much that he helped me grow and serve my lessons and gain so much spiritual advancement and so much growth. And that, once you change your opinion of something that happens in your life, the domino effect is what I'm trying to get at is all the events that occurred sequentially from one event that then, you know, creates another event and on. When you change your perspective, even though I'm looking back many decades of when these events happened, but when the moment that you change that, it ripples through all time and space, and it ripples through your whole life. So those events that then were the next logical step from the first event, they change too. They no longer have the emotional drama and trauma to your life. They are no longer triggers to how you react. What I started to say at the beginning of this and didn't quite get to the whole point about why it's important to turn around and look at these things is for anyone to be less conditioned by their emotions, to be more present and more the spirit of who you really are, to allow that to inhabit your body and to be that instead of the third dimensional aspect of yourself. The emotional body, which is our largest body, has to be really clear and has to be cleansed of these emotions, you know? Like, we just had this eclipse, and everybody that I know, including myself, you know, got kind of emotional. You know, did you feel that? Did that happen to you? Or all of a sudden, without really anything in the third dimension really happening to bring up old feelings, didn't they just kind of come up anyway? And all of a sudden you're kind of thinking you're sad or you're angry or, you know, some form of a negative emotion is playing out in your life without a reason. And these are the things that we need to clear. These are coming up now at these moments for us to look at them and clear them. Just like Ron was talking about going, that was a great story. I love that. A great technique. Going to the mall and seeing where, watching people and seeing where your judgments are, and then clearing them. Well, it's the same thing. That's clearing judgment, but you can do the same thing with your emotions. You know, when you feel unloved, or you feel insecure, or you feel fear, or you feel any of those type of things, look at where that's coming from. What story of your history produced that? Where did that happen in your life that was the first of the dominoes? And then rewrite that. Look at it from a different perspective. Look at it from the higher perspective, and it will diffuse that story. It's the stories that bring up our emotions. It's the erroneous beliefs about ourselves. You know, my belief that my father didn't love me. That was a tremendous thing that ricocheted through my entire life. And how you view your father, that gets translated to all men in your life. You know, the car mechanic, you know, the post, just men. It gets transferred to all men. Likewise, the relationship you have with your mother gets transferred to all women. Or if you have siblings, you know, then that can also cause subcategories in the male and female patterns. But when you change that, it changes everything. And the same thing now with money. I know there was a couple of people that were, I was watching the fast chat with Ron, and some people were talking about money and not having as much as they would like. That too, that's based on a story somewhere. Somewhere in your life, your experiences, you didn't have enough money, or your family was not, you know, what we would consider a well-to-do family. And you believe that that's who you were, and that that's who you are, and that that's the kind of life you need. That's not true. That's a story. Money, the kind of money that we have coming into us, money is nothing more than energy. Money is an exchange. They call it currency for a reason. It's the same as electricity. It's an energy, it's an exchange, it's a power, and I don't mean that in the negative corporate, you know, we have power because we have money and, you know, we don't have to care because we're the phone company and all of those kind of things. It very much equates with your presence and the kind of perception you have about your power and who you are. Now, let me do a little sidebar. There are people on this planet that have an obscene amount of money that do not have the spirituality that matches that. Most of those are dark force energies. They are dark force entities, and they are not to be used as the same example. And they have that money because they are, you know, here to play out the light and the dark scenario. And, you know, we can actually learn from them in a perverse sort of way or in a good sort of way and see that once you do have that power, how much you can do. It's not money that's evil. It's how people use the money, what their intentions are, that are either good or evil. Money is just energy. When you have energy, you can do what you want with it. So, again, if you want more abundance, just rewrite the story as to why you don't have it and have it turn around as to why you should have it. and feeling that you are totally, completely deserving of all the money in the universe will certainly help you get all the money in the universe. And your relationship with money and how you think about it and judgments that you have about money is a big key to whether you have it or not. If you are resentful that person has a lot of money but you don't, that resentment is blocking the flow of abundance and prosperity of coming to you. And if you, oh gosh, if you, I don't know, there's a really great story, a really great example, but it's one of my friends and I don't want to tell it. Watch how people that have money treat it. All right, I'll use a story. I'll use myself because I did change my flow of money around. I've been self-employed since 1980, and during that time, from then until now, depending on what I was doing, because I'm blessed with a lot of different talents, and if one source of talent or one thing wasn't bringing in money, enough money, I had the ability to bring it in from another channel, you know, from another source, because I was a graphic designer and I had clients and I had a party designing business where I would decorate huge banquet halls for corporate parties, you know, with a theme or something. And oh, what else did I do? I did weddings. Anyway, a lot of different things that I was always kind of, you know, bringing in money in one direction or another. But there were times too when no matter what I did, there was just no money coming in and stuff. And so I would have to create something and reinvent myself. And as long as I lived in Los Angeles, where I had millions of people to draw from as customers and clients and sources for flow, the down periods were not too terribly long. And I was always kind of conservative with my money, so I didn't spend it as fast as it came in. I spent what I needed and what I wanted, and then I would save the rest. So when I hit down periods, I would have that money to kind of live off of until I found, you know, another source. And so it worked out, and because it did work out, I really didn't see the underlying feelings and lessons that I really needed to learn and turn around about money until I moved to Mount Shasta. And when I moved to Mount Shasta, I came here actually with a rather obscene amount of cash because due to inflation and the real estate market, you know, I cashed in my house and had a large amount of money. And thinking, well, you know, I can just really create all kinds of things. I can do all kinds of stuff. I'll never need money again because I'll just keep making it. What I didn't realize until I got here is that I needed population. Mount Shasta at the time when I moved here had about 5,000 people. That's not enough of a base for my projects, you know, to pay for themselves and to prosper and to do things. So within 3 years of moving to Mount Shasta, I was totally broke and living on food stamps and couldn't have welfare because I didn't have children. All they would give me is food stamps, and I gladly took those. And I had a lot of credit cards from my opulent days, and that carried no balances, that had, you know, that I could draw a lot of money off of. And that's what I did. I would pay when I didn't have money. And meanwhile, I'm struggling. I'm trying to do everything. I became a real estate agent, you know, and that ended up costing me more money in fees and monthly association fees and all of that than I made. I was, you know, trying to get jobs and stuff. Very few things up here in Mount Shasta that I was suited for. And because I'm not a teacher or a doctor or the kind of professions that do have jobs up here. And anyway, you know, I'm a smart person. I'm a resourceful person. I did everything I could. I was going down fast and down the tubes, and I didn't want to lose my house because then where would I go? And I used to worry about being a bag lady. And, I mean, it really was not that far from, you know, from possibility. And so the universe and me, by being in that situation, forced me to really look at money and how to... I knew that I couldn't get it third dimensionally while I was in Mount Shasta, and I was so broke I couldn't go back to L.A. I mean, the house that I left was now, three years after leaving it, valued at over $1 million. And, you know, I couldn't even manage with, you know, $600 or $700 for the mortgage on this house. What was I going to do, you know, when rent for a simple one-bedroom apartment was almost $2,000, you know, at that time? And so I was trapped. I had to be here. I had to dig out of the hole, and I had to learn my lessons from that, from this point. So what I discovered, and it took 5 years, and the 5 years, you know, it was progressively better, but for it to really change me and to really rewrite those scripts and eliminate the fear and all of that, took me 5 years to really turn it around. And it's when you really overcome something or you really go to the next level, it's not like just all of a sudden you get a good job and oh good, now I've got money, you know, because you can always lose that job. It's not like a third dimensional thing. You feel something kick into you deep in your core that you know, or at least I did, that I knew that I would never, ever, no matter what happened, ups and downs of the economy, losing my business, you know, flood, famine, whatever, that I still would always be okay and I would always have abundance coming to me and my needs would always be met because I tapped into that divine source, the divine source that of abundance and prosperity that we're all entitled to. And the way I did it, one of the ways that I did it, I've only got 6 minutes left here, so I can't really tell too many of the stories, but one of the really important things that I did is just accepting, again, just and simply, accepting deep down in my core and deep down in my belief system that I was totally abundant and that all energy and that all money and that all flow comes from the divine source. It doesn't come from, it's in, totally independent of jobs and schooling and education and lucky breaks and all of that. It's that divine energy that will create the lucky break or bring it, but it's, again, it's a shift in thinking and it's a shift in accepting who you are and what you are and what you're entitled to. And it's a deep-seated shift that happens within you. And one of the things that I had to, that I did to get to that point, to get to that, was was to alleviate the fear. You know, I mean, here every month I had all these bills, and now I was incurring all this credit card debt, you know, and the credit cards had to be paid. And for a while I could pay one credit card after, you know, using one to pay the other and shifting money around and all of this stuff. I don't suggest anyone does that. It's very complex, and a lot of people get into a lot of trouble. But at that time, it was the only thing that I could do. And every month, you know, about a week before the bills needed to be paid, the fear would start kicking in. And I was, you know, terrified. How am I going to pay these bills? What am I going to do? This and that. And I would find a way, and I would pay them that month. But then I would start worrying about, okay, I made it this month, but what am I going to do next month? How am I going to pull it off next month? And I was constantly worried. I had to learn, and this is what took me 5 years, to get over the fear, to not worry about how and where the money was coming from, but to just trust and faith and have faith that it was going to come, and that somehow, you know, I would be provided for, that my divine self would find a way to do it. And every month it was a different story. It was a different way that I got out of it and that I paid my bills. And sometimes, I look back now sometimes and I go, how did I do that, you know? It became an otherworldly sort of situation. And when it got to where I didn't have one little, because, you know, your mind can tell, you can tell your mind, don't worry, and your mind will go, okay, we're not going to worry, but that feeling in your stomach, that feeling in your gut, that little twinge of fear, you have to get rid of that too. That's when you're totally done with that, then you know that you're totally done with fear on that subject. So, hopefully that might help somebody with their financial and, you know, and use the violet flame on all of this stuff. When you're rewriting the scripts of your life and looking at things from a different perspective and the higher perspective, you know, or use the violet flame to help you do that, to clear away those stories and the, besides the mental stories, but that emotional hook that comes up from them, that knee-jerk emotion, you know, violet flame it. When it comes up and you see it, same with your judgments, when you see them happen, when you have emotions coming out of nowhere that are not in your best interest, that keep you off your center, violet flame them. Just put them in the violet fire and ask that they be transmuted into perfection and into clarity and into calmness and into peace and into harmony. And bring that into your body. Keep filling yourself with that that you wish to become. And keep clearing yourself and staying centered and getting to the point where no matter what happens to you, no matter, you know, who breaks your heart on Tuesday, that by Tuesday afternoon, or even better yet, at the moment of the heartbreak, there is no emotion. That you are still clear and you're centered and you just look at it from a different perspective, that this is for my highest good. Anything and everything that happens to me is for my highest good and my growth. And I'm watching, I've got very few seconds left to go. I wasn't able to read anything. Da 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 da. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Kylie and Ariana. And Nancy Sue, and I will see you all next week. And in the meantime, to your violet flames, okay? And I love you. Bye.